Hello and good afternoon, everybody. It's me, Corval, here today, and I got Beavis and Mikey with me, and you know what that means. It's Thirsty Thursdays. I mean, I know we're all thirsty for some liquidity, right? It's dry out there, dude. There's no money anywhere in the world right now. That's what it feels like. But that's not all. We're not just going to talk about how miserable this economy is. We're going to be talking about SBF. It's a little bit juicier. So it might wet your whistle. He's on trial and a lot of dramas come out as a result of this new book that's being published about him. So sit tight, folks. Lock in, because today is going to be the show that changes your life.
They take your money, then they take you down with them. Let's do better together. ERN, extremely resilient, naturally.
What's up, guys? Austin here with Block Bytes, and I just wanted to give a big shout out to this team from Shimmer Network for sponsoring our channel. If you haven't looked into Shimmer yet, they are a DAG-based, feeless layer one network that's highly scalable. You can learn more by visiting shimmer.network.
Hello, gentlemen. How are you today?
I'm good. Greetings. Robot.
We got a robot here in the studio. We got Mikey down there. Mikey is silent as always. Guys, you holding up all right?
Okay. Hanging in there.
Jesus Christ. All right. I'm bringing all the energy today. That's fine. That's fine.
I got the coins. They're back, everybody.
There you go, dude. Yeah, man. That's what we want to see. Manifest what you want to see in the world. BB. Well, I got a little story for you guys. I found this a little bit amusing. So I don't check my mail too often, right? But thank God I did, because I went down there, I checked my mail, and I had two very important documents. One, I had a SAG invitation, an invitation to join the Screen Actors Guild. Can you believe it?
How?
It's an important rite of passage for any presenter or whatever. All it costs is $3,000, and then you too can get access to their financial statements. And I think there's like some other benefits or whatever. I don't know. But even more importantly, and this is why it was even more important that I checked my mail, because I almost missed this.
Right, I mean, you're super excited about like the SAG thing. You know, it's like, wow.
It's all right, it's all right. I'm more excited for the second thing though, Mikey.
Oh.
Is I got jury summons, baby. I got summoned to jury duty. And that has never happened to me before, ever in my life. I've been eagerly awaiting this day to fulfill my civic duty. And yeah, dude, I've never felt more popular in my life, dude. Two important groups want my attention. Can you believe it, guys? Little old me, Corval.
I can't believe it.
So in like 2 weeks, it's probably just gonna be like Mikey on the show for like a little while I decide a man's fate.
Woman's fate. They're criminals too.
Are you doing SBF? Is
Am
it
I
time?
Doing SBF? Oh, yes.
Are you gonna be on the SBF case?
No. Interesting that you bring it up though, because what I was gonna say about this trial is supposedly all that's happened so far, from what I can tell, is they've selected the jury already. They've got the 12 and then they've got the 6 backups already. So unfortunately, no. I don't know if I would be able to do it. I mean, I didn't lose any money in FTX. So I guess like that's not a conflict of interest there, but because I have so many recorded videos of me saying he's like retarded and ugly and stupid hair and a thief or whatever.
Oh, yeah, you would probably get filtered like, well, to me. They don't want anybody that is familiar at all with what he did. Because it's like, you know, otherwise it could be like, oh, just crypto guys. Just crypto guys got hurt. Who cares about them? Those bastards.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. But apparently his lawyer's a big, not doing a good job. So
SBF's lawyer's not doing a good job.
That's what I've been seeing across the chats. I haven't been keeping up with it, but his lawyer's apparently just asking the flimsiest, dumbest questions ever.
Ah, interesting, interesting.
I love that. Yeah. I love it's that, by the way, just really quickly. That's what it is now. You know, when Beba said across the, I thought he was going to say like, you know, across the media, across the news sphere. No. It's across the chats. And it's very true. That's where we get our news from nowadays. Is in
the chat. Yeah.
Not me. I was reading the Wall Street Journal today.
Pleb.
See, Corval's like a secondary info.
I'm an old head, bro. Yeah, Mikey and Beavis are both Zoomers. They're always talking about Riz in Ohio. Me over here, I'm reading Wall Street Journal.
Ohio, honestly, it has some benefits. That
Riz? Okay.
You know, Ohio is a hard place to understand. But once you really tune in, you know.
All I know is they've got Cleveland there. Cleveland.
You know what I say there. About Cleveland? It's the best place on earth.
Never Drew heard Carey loves my it. Interesting, so fellas. Interesting. Well,
LeBron James, enough to move to LA.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, King James. Speaking of King, look how good my transition is. Our King, SBF, the savior of the industry, dude. One of my best friends. My two best friends, Beavis and SBF, and it's a close tie.
But I'm second. We got
SBF up here. Sends to 50 plus years. Would you guys take this? What are you guys taking on this spread here? Are you going yes? Are you going no? How much are you putting down? Because I'll tell you, I've been thinking about putting around like $50,000 on yes.
No, you're not. Shut up.
$8,000.
I'm gonna put $1 million on yes.
No, you won't. You no way.
Just kidding.
Oh wait, so you're capped on return, huh?
Sentence
how much? I mean, yeah, there needs to be liquidity to pay out on the other end.
Yeah, I guess so. Only
this is just Uni V2. I think it's just like a regular bonding curve.
Interesting. Yeah, we should do a video on this, dude. Polymarket. I've actually never really looked into Polymarket too deeply. I know you can bet on anything here. You can bet on what color panties Mikey's wearing. You can bet on freaking who's gonna win in Ukraine, like what the kill count's gonna be. It's like kind of disgusting and disturbing, but kind of cool. Disturbing.
So SBF sentenced to 50 plus years.
Yeah,
very cool. Interesting. Let's see what Paul Allen thinks. And by Paul Allen, I mean the chat. What does the chat think? John Stepp says 8 to 12 years serves four. I'm thinking he's gonna. So I think he's going to definitely be. You know, found guilty. He's going to get some amount of time. I think it might be a little more than 12, but he doesn't serve near the maximum amount. He only serves like a fraction of it. I just think that's what's going to happen. I don't know.
What did Bernie Madoff get?
Execution, I think. Something. He had he's going to die in prison, I think. He was kind of old.
150 years in prison. Which, I guess when you're an old guy, that's just like all show.
Yeah.
Interesting.
It's crazy when they give like an old guy like that large of a sentence. I mean, it's like all for show, but it's like kind of crazy where they're like, you're 90 years old. We're going to give you a life sentence, two consecutive life sentences. So it's like, well, like 5 years, 10 years. But SBF is a young feller, dude. If they give him, you know, 30, that might as well be a life sentence, dude.
Sentences. 20 years in prison when you're only 30 years old, that's like, I mean, 30 is your like post prime era. So it's like you had all your prime to make mistakes and learn.
Whoa, hold up. 30 is your prime, bro. I'm 30 years old, dude. What are you talking about, Beavis?
Yeah, sorry. 30 is your prime.
Beavis is just a prodigy.
I just go by basketball years. So 27, 28, 29, you know, that's your prime. And I just assume it applies to everything. I forget that there's like
I'm trolling you a little bit.
Humans have mental capabilities. So maybe you know, maybe it extends further than that. But
no, I think you're really right.
All
I think
care is whether you can, you know, box out a teenager at the rec. So
Okay. Yeah, so I mean, we didn't get a lot here. We got 8 to 12 in here. We got John Stepp's the only one that really gave us an answer here on what they think. So what do you guys think? You guys think it's likely he's going to serve any significant amount of time? I feel like John Stepp's is 8 to 12 serves 4 probably makes the most sense. He's probably going to get out on good behavior.
I feel like what kind of prison is he going to be at? Like, is this going to be a tennis court prison or is this going to be like, you know,
That's what I imagine. It's going to be like the one from Wolf on Wall Street, but supposedly the one he's at now is like a real, you guys seen Office Space, you know, where it's a real pound you in the ass prison, like a real federal prison.
That's what I was trying to express without saying it.
Well, don't worry. I'll say it.
It's weird. I read an essay in my early 20s about how America is like really draconian, and that the punishment for like any crime worthy of prison is essentially, if you're a man at least, and probably for women, is you have to be sexually assaulted. And it's like the real crime deterrent in this country. It's like, you know, prison is prison, but you know, you go there, it's like, it's a well-known fact that you're going to get sexually assaulted probably. And that's like literally our like penal system. Literally.
I remember reading something similar. I think that was a big part of the conversation for a while, because there were, like when Office Space came out, it was a common joke, like in Chappelle's show and stuff, like don't drop the soap. And eventually people were like, wait a minute, isn't it like a little bit weird that we just say like this is like okay? Like that's just like a normal accepted thing to happen. So, you know, I hope that actually doesn't happen to SBF for everybody's sake, but the point still stands. He's in a real prison. Like John Sepp says, MDC. I don't know what it's called. I don't know what that stands for.
The Metropolitan Detention Center in Brooklyn.
Yeah. If you remember those Twitter posts from a couple months ago, there was that guy in prison with him saying that he was falling in with the Asian gangs. And I bet a lot of like, you know, Chinese crypto users, which is probably like a lot of Triad and you know, and keep in mind, I know absolutely nothing about this,
the Yakuza.
But, you know, I assume that a lot of people made a lot of money off of what he did. So hopefully he has, I mean, I guess not hopefully, but I'm sure he has goodwill in some of these domains.
I think Shkreli said he's got his boys in there to protect him. Philip, I've got a counterpoint for you that he's a manipulated kid with bad parents and not a real gangster. We're going to get into it. I think he might actually be a bit of a sociopath or psychopath. Oh, yeah. I forget the difference between the two, but when you
I don't think he knows it. I don't think he understands that he's like, there's like the border between autism and psychopathy, where autism is like an agent of good who's bad with emotions, and psychopathy is like an agent of evil who's bad with emotions. And I think he wishes he was an agent of good, but unfortunately, whether by nature or nurture, he's an agent of evil.
He definitely is. It doesn't take a lot of reading into his beliefs with what he called effective altruism. We can get into some of it. One of the things that stood out to me was apparently effective altruists were trying to like funnel money towards what they believe to be humanity ending threats, which is like very like bizarre, like meteors and shit, as opposed to, you know, like hunger or poverty or, you know, homelessness or illness, disease, like things that they could actually like directly impact.
The things that it's easy to like scam margins off of.
Yeah.
Foundation and charity wise.
Okay. Yeah, that's what they were really targeting. Like, yeah,
that's really stupid.
Laser.
You donate to the meteor laser, you're just donating to some like, you know, mad scientist slush fund, you know.
Yeah. That's kind of what they were doing. But real quick,
I'm gonna donate to the Department of Defense. I'm an effective altruist.
yeah, that's pretty much what it is. Maybe that is, I mean, he did make a lot of donations to the politicians, and you got to grease some DOD hands, I'm sure, if you want to. Maybe he didn't grease the DOD enough. But
if I gave politicians that much money, I would require, like, at least, if not being able to own, like an amphibious tank, I would want to be able to, like, go into the underground lair and test out some of the secret weapons. That should be like the Patreon, like the top tier prize when you donate to politicians.
They should let you touch an alien if you donate enough.
Yeah, I would be too scared to touch an alien, to be honest. No, dude, I could barely touch the starfish.
It'll be like the aquarium.
Dude, I would touch that alien, dude. So right.
I just feel like it's rude. You know, it's not even so much that
I'd get its consent.
Okay. How?
How?
I'd ask it. Can I touch you?
It responds in perfect English. You may.
You may. Oh, Mikey, you're here, finally. You may.
He's psychic or something. I've been waiting. John Steps says that the MDC is no fun place.
Yeah.
John
knows
what John Steps knows his shit. He used to work for the NYCLU, worked with folks in the prison, said that MDC is so bad. You're locked in chains when you get yard time. So, yeah, it's like that. He's like Michael Myers.
Damn, they're giving him the Michael Myers treatment. And that's for the best. So I had this question. This question came to me the other night. I was on a walk, and I was thinking, if SBF gets off, what does that mean for crypto? Like, is it, if he gets off, does that kind of like, does that like knight crypto as like true real finance? Like, he'll remain in a rich private prison like the Wolf of Wall Street. And is it better for the industry if he does this? Because then it's like, oh, they're just like Wall Street guys. They can just steal like $1 billion and it's fine. What do you think?
What do you mean when you say get off? Do you mean like get off scot-free? Like,
I mean,
like he doesn't go to jail at all, or he gets
he'll get like a slap on the wrist.
He goes
like,
to jail.
Is it better if he gets, if is it better if they just annihilate him? Like throw him in prison for 30 years, no parole, 15, 20. Or is it better if they're like, okay, 15, 20 with time served, 6 months probation or something?
I mean, I think like,
let's separate our emotions for it. Let's think about it.
At this point, it doesn't matter, to be honest. I think it's just like a spectacle right now. I think it's him going to prison or not is not going to affect anything, in my opinion. I think like, you know,
I agree.
The closure, I think, is important. Like being able to actually sift through the case. The case itself is important. Being able to see what happened, why it happened, how it happened. But I think that's all that matters. I think, you know, giving regulators that information. I mean, he goes to jail, like the biggest crypto guy going to jail. That's like, you know, the BlackRock CEO going to jail or whatever, you know. I think it would be bad for the industry overall, but it's already like bad, you know. It would just be like the bow on top of this big bad thing for our industry. So yeah, it's like, it doesn't even matter at this point. It is what
it is. I see. So this is almost irrelevant at this point, this chapter, the SBF chapter.
Adam said,
and I guess the Binance one is still opening, isn't it? So
that's, yeah,
Adam got more said, things in the radar.
Adam said they should sentence him to serve 3 havenings.
Yeah.
I mean, 3 havenings without being able to do his little carry trade. You know, that's a lot of money left on the table.
I agree with you, though. I think it doesn't matter whether he goes to jail or doesn't go to jail, or if he gets off early or if he even stays in jail forever.
He's just an asshole, you know, and he's not gonna have a career again.
That was gonna be my next point, right? Yeah. So when he does come out,
he's just gonna be languishing in the torment of his mind.
I think until the
end of time.
I disagree with you guys. I still think it's actually kind of important. I think because of what the precedent it sets for financial crimes, specifically as they're involved with crypto, because we're also gonna see. Let's lay out some more of the case here, because what the prosecution is saying, right? We all kind of know what the prosecution's saying. He's a scumbag. He's a criminal. He lied. He embezzled. He mismanaged intentionally funds, right? He had 2 firms. He claimed he didn't run one, but he used his girlfriend to run it and manipulated his data by like shuffling funds back and forth, right? Crimes. Real crimes is what we're talking about. This is what the prosecution's saying. I'm doing it word for word. This is exactly how he delivered it. And the defense is saying he's just a victim of bad business. He's a victim of the downturn in the economy. He's a victim of the downturn in the crypto markets. He didn't do anything wrong except for not be good at business. And that's pretty much what they're saying. They're saying, he lost money. Yeah, he failed, but like people, it's not a crime to fail at business is what essentially they're saying.
I mean,
the defense's case.
I agree with that to a certain extent. I think there is like this concept of the, you know, VC well-connected trust fund kid. You know, you look at A16Z, Paradigm, whoever, they invest in connections more so than anything, more so than tech. And here was a well-connected kid. He went to MIT or wherever. And, you know, a lot of us have been to college, maybe some college. A lot of us know what you learn at college. I just think, like, he was not aware or maybe even smart enough. Like, when you're told you're a genius your whole life, and you just have this idea, mm-hmm. and you're like, oh, I'm going to do this. It's going to be so awesome. And you don't realize that it's bad practice or illegal or stupid. And you just think it's the smartest thing ever. Like, oh, I figured out fraud. I imagine that's just a kid who has his whole life had barriers lifted out from in front of him. And, you know, he wasn't a business person. He wasn't mm-hmm. humble enough to sit down and learn and figure it out. And mm-hmm. I honestly think the VCs that backed him and funded him, like, did an absolutely horrible job of due diligence, did an absolutely horrible job of making sure that he wasn't doing that stupid ass shit. Because mm-hmm. they should be aware that when you fund, you know, a 25-year-old or whatever with billions and billions of dollars, they are 100% too not good to handle that sort of scale. And that's kind of why you look at, okay, why was FTX so small with so much funding? Why was everybody spread so thin? You know, why were good practices not met? Why was everybody there young? You know, it's like, here's a guy who is a certifiable idiot. He's like a genius idiot sort of thing.
He's a wunderkind, bro. Yeah. He's a wunderkind. That's why what we saw was an image crafted, not necessarily even by SBF, but by his orbiters who were trying to sell it. That's kind of the narrative that's arising, for better or for worse, in what's his name? I just had it up here. So the thing that's came out. So, all right. So there's a new book that came out called Going Infinite by Michael Lewis, right? And this was conveniently timed with the start of the trial. And it's by this biographer guy who followed SBF around and got the whole story of the rise and fall, right?
Yeah.
And a big part of it is he's describing how SBF is like awkward, weird, kind of a prick, but really smart, really good at puzzles. So that's kind of how he got in. Like, Jane Street pulled him out of college. He worked there for a while, met a couple people, and then he went and started FTX. And then the people around him kind of leveraged his like little status to get this funding, is kind of what I'm getting. Shkreli, Martin Shkreli on Twitter, Wagiak account,
you
had
love
a really
Shkreli.
Interesting series of posts where he was reading the book and he's like got a bunch of excerpts. So I've got a couple of them here. But actually, before we do that, I want to give you context about the guy who wrote it and his take on SBF. If you guys are interested in this here, let me pop this open here. Let's see.
Look, he's a strange dude.
Yeah.
I mean, in the end, it's like, again, there's sort of this like Bernie Madoff style con man, like benighted strange dude over his head.
Yeah.
I feel like I ended up I had come down in the Bernie Madoff category.
Right.
When I read the indictment.
Yeah.
That's not really the line this book takes. Your impression of it.
Well, so just for starters, I mean, this, like, I think this is an important distinction. Everybody shouts at me when I make it. But Bernie Madoff, it was a Ponzi scheme. And there's like a definition of a Ponzi scheme. Right. There's no real business there.
Right.
So Sam Bankman-Fried had two businesses. He had this hedge fund he called Alameda Research, but he had this crypto exchange, and the exchange was a gold mine. It generated $1 billion in revenues in 2021, like $400 million in profits. It was real. Without the hedge fund there to screw it up, it'd still be there. You know, it was a casino. Right. It was just like they took little slices of every transaction in crypto.
So I think this is an important thing for his defense. I think it's no coincidence that this book came out now, because this is essentially the same line that his defense is going on, right? Which is that he was a successful businessman, right? He was experiencing success with FTX. It just so happened that this hedge fund he had blew up. And I think that's it's an interesting way to tie this court case, which is really just about this guy, to the greater fate of crypto as a whole. Because what the defense is trying to say is like, oh, the legitimacy of crypto almost, right? Like crypto, if it's a legitimate business, then he didn't do anything wrong. That's kind of what they're seeming to try and build it towards, right?
Yeah, so I mean, I see that point
here, and it depends on how the narratives kind of develop and are pushed. There is a risk here, I think, of them being like eventually like, oh, crypto's a scam. This guy's a scam artist. Well, the top thing you hear about crypto stuff all the time is it's a Ponzi, you know?
Yeah. I mean, I think like if they had dug in, if the liquidators and stuff had dug in and found quality big business practices, mm-hmm. and they hadn't found intermingling of the books and they hadn't mm-hmm. found actual crime outright, I think that sort of defense would fly. But like it's best case scenario, negligence to a degree that is like, I hard to even fathom. It's like negligence to a degree that it just wiped out, you know, $5 billion. Mm-hmm. And having a hedge fund that blows up, like it's, you know, it just takes one kind of invalidating movement to blow up a hedge fund, to be honest. Mm-hmm. But if you look at what that hedge fund was doing and how it was doing it, again, mm-hmm. you noodle back into the vein of, oh, maybe it's crime, you know, Sam Tabasco or whatever the hell, you know, genius quant, you know, going around farming and dumping tokens everywhere, doing the most like degenerate stuff humanly possible.
The biggest degen of us all.
Like who are their LPs, you know? And it seems like their LPs were FTX. And, you know, I think when your LP is a business that you also own or that your friends also own, and you're just doing something very clearly not okay. I mean, to me, no amount of running around the issue can really solve the fact that criminal activity happened. And it's like there's negligence and then there's actively doing crime. And I feel like they crossed the line from negligence to actively doing crime. And maybe their crime activities were a direct result of their negligence. And, you know, these legal lines are very hard to maintain and cross. And they were operating at a scale that was very hard to manage and control. But at the end of the day, it was very clear everybody knew something was wrong. Mm-hmm. And, you know, again, like I think the VCs and the people that backed it and supported it and fed us FTX, I mean, I think there needs to be some level of accountability for them. And maybe their punishment is they just get zeroed out, you know, like, oh, sorry, your investment's worthless now. Fuck you. But, you know, it's like these are like the whole point of a VC is to plug an experienced businessman into a rapidly growing operation so that they can, you know, help the founder scale something that they don't have the skills to scale. And obviously that didn't happen, you know? And it's like, you have, you know, A16Z, Sequoia was in there. Mm-hmm. Like all these people, like they boast about, you know, how, you know, we hop on the board and we alter outcomes. We've got the, you know, the best financiers in the whole world working for us, you know, able to build businesses unlike the, you know, you've ever seen before. And here we are seeing like SBF, you know, using QuickBooks with his girlfriend, you know, while their business falls apart. And exactly, Elizabeth Holmes and Theranos, charm offensive. That was a really, really good comparison. It's just like, you know, you get funded. It's like they took the, you know, wear the outfit for the job you want or whatever the hell. They took that like 100 times too seriously. And they were just like, oh, we're going to fake it till we make it, guys. And meanwhile, like, however they were managing risk, like it was one sit down for 2 hour session and looking at their balance sheet, they would have found they were just bleeding. And you know, no amount of like negligence, faking it till you make it, whatever, no amount of getting lost in the sauce, I think results in what happened at FTX. I think the only reason that this happened was crime. The only reason FTX blew up was because crimes were committed, whether they know they were crimes or not, which, you know, I'll tell you as someone who has to manage balance sheets, and of course not at the scale that they do, but you know, it like there's this level of apprehension, no matter how mundane the transaction, you know, especially on the blockchain, where it's like, you know, you have to be a psychopath not to pause and wonder, okay, is this the best thing to do right now, without double checking, without doing a test transaction, without doing everything, you know, without making sure security is on point, without thinking, I wonder how I can improve this process. Like,
yeah,
you know, if you're operating at that scale and not having that apprehension, then you need like to just never be in finance ever again. And
you for know, sure,
if that's the best case scenario for SBF. Then I think that's good for everyone. I think he just needs to, he should be like, I mean, I don't even know, like,
he should be rehabilitated. You rehabilitate him and put him on like making,
he should just be forced to live in like a shitty house in the suburbs for the rest of his life. And he should be on a stipend of like, you know, $55,000 a year. And that should just be his. I know what you're saying, Mikey, but
that sounds great.
No, we need to put
it in. It sounds great in theory, but I've had a better time being very poor, and I've had a better time being fairly well off than I've had living in the suburbs on 55K a year. Better time.
I think we need to put him to work at Fidelity in the call center.
Yes, dude.
For
yes.
15 years.
Yes.
If you've ever worked a job like that, you know, you're like, oh, I can take my Series 7 in 6 months. The thing is, no one takes their Series 7 in 6 months because everyone fucking quits because it sucks so bad working in that call center.
Imagine you call that call center. It's just like, hello.
They need to get us on this case, dude. Oh, Fidelity call center, and he needs to have like a 75-minute commute from the suburbs.
Yeah.
Okay. And
30-minute lunch break.
What city?
We need to give him like an irreparable ankle injury. And then and then just like let him.
We need to hobble him.
Yeah. Maybe that is, maybe that's like too evil.
That's true justice, I think. Mm-hmm. Mr. Got Plenty says, when I look at Doquan, I don't see a crime. I see incompetence. I see software that didn't work. When I see FTX, I see a degen gambler. I don't know. I think Doquan is also guilty of some pretty heinous crimes. I think he did do a lot of mismanagement of funds and a lot of deceptive practices.
Yeah. The Chai fake transactions and the marketing of those fake transactions, I think, was the key linchpin in the hyper growth of Luna. And I think 100% that's a crime, and 100% that blew up into an absolutely insane mess. So his crimes maybe weren't as like heinous as SBF's, and weren't as degenerate. And maybe like you get into his mindset, you're like, oh, you know, he's just trying to, you know, give himself an edge. But at the end of the day, that's a crime, and it blew up into, you know, a multi-billion-dollar meltdown. Yeah.
It blew up in a bunch of people's faces. So real quick, I just got a couple more humorous things I wanted to point out about SBF. Then we got a little play I want to put on for you guys, just to give you guys some context, though. If you remember... Oh, I got to...
If you remember...
So I just thought it was a funny little report here. On architecture, FTX wanted three things. This is not a joke. A building shaped like an F. The side of the building should look like his hair. And a tungsten cube that cost $1 million when he was designing their offices. So if that doesn't give you kind of an insight into his mindset right there.
That's absolutely psychotic. That's next level psychotic.
In the badminton courts.
There's nothing cute about that. I promise you. There's absolutely nothing cute. Like, just imagine him like after one of his weird Bahamas orgies, like limping out like a goblin, and then, you know, telling an architect to go build a big F-shaped tower that has his hair on it. That's like absolutely. That's worse. That's worse than the financial crimes, I would say. that's like he should go to life. That erased
architecture.
Yeah, and that erased all of my sympathy. He should get.
And a giant tungsten cube.
I'm on a giant tungsten cube for the memes.
So this is a quote from SBF in an exchange he had with Caroline where she confesses her feelings for him. He says in response, "In a lot of ways, I don't really have a soul. This is a lot more obvious in some contexts than others. But in the end, there's a pretty decent argument that my empathy is fake. My feelings are fake. My facial reactions are fake. I don't feel happiness." So look, people suffer from mental illness. That's fine. I get it. But this seems pretty damning stuff, I think.
Yeah. This is a guy who was on antipsychotics 24/7.
Yeah.
He was on stims 24/7. This is like, you know, and looking at his parents, looking at the interactions now that a lot of this stuff is bubbling to the surface, like, I don't blame him for being psychotic. Like, he's a psychotic kid from a psychotic family. And honestly, like, financially speaking, career speaking, et cetera, I think the best thing that we could do is just zero that whole family unit out. You know, it's like in a society like America, wealth is power. You know, wealth is lineage. Wealth is cultural impact. And the way you kind of cut these variables out of the equation, these kind of toxic variables, is you just zero them out. You know, you send them to the suburbs. You give them that Fidelity call center job. And I think that just needs to happen. I think that's worse. I mean, it's not necessarily worse than prison, but it's more beneficial than prison. And, you know, it's like you send this guy to prison, he's going to come out, he's still going to be rich. His parents are still going to be rich, and they're just going to keep the ball rolling generation after generation after generation. And, you know, I'm not saying we need to do some like Chinese, like slaughter nine generations, you know, sort of deal. But, you know, there needs to be accountability kind of up the stack, so to speak.
Well, I wouldn't be surprised if his parents have to pay some sort of price, because I think his father is already being charged with some financial crimes. He did something called block shorting, I think is what it's called. It's where you short an asset that you own, that you're already long on. I'm not going to get to the specifics. It just gives them some tax breaks that they don't really like. But all right, so let me set the stage for our play here. Do you remember when... What kicked this all off was Caroline's attempt to buy all the FTT back at $22, trying to inspire confidence in the market. She was replying to CZ, who was talking mad shit, right? He's like, "How you guys are insolvent." So that's to kicks off a series of events that reveals the insolvency of FTX and causes the collapse of the entire exchange, right? Now, I want you guys to imagine that you're in the FTX office shaped like an F. There's a big we're in the room with a big tungsten cube, right? And Caroline is giving a speech. She's giving a speech to the assembled team. She's assembled all the traders, all the quants, all the geniuses they have at their firm. Mikey, you want to kick us off?
I will be playing the part of Caroline.
I will be the narrator. Wait. I need to open the script. We're psychotic. Okay.
Welcome to Block Bites Theater, guys. So I will be playing the part of Caroline.
I think I'll just start by saying some stuff and feel free to ask questions. Mostly, I want to say I'm sorry. This really sucks. It's really not fair to you guys.
Dude, you're too good at this.
She understood that people might not want to stick around to help clean up whatever mess needed cleaning up, but...
For people who do stick around, it's possible there's some future thing.
She concluded on a hopeful note, referring to the deal with CZ. At the time, the deal was still on the table, and FTX could have been saved.
Repaying all of our creditors and making sure Alameda didn't go bankrupt is probably, like, good?
Yeah. Hey, I'm over in accounting, JB. Can you tell us how big the hole in the balance sheet is, please?
I'd rather not.
Maybe I can help you out. I've been looking it over a little bit. Is it closer to the $1 billion mark, or is it closer to the $6 billion mark?
The ladder.
Whoa.
After her talk, Caroline approached a female employee and said,
"If you want to stay and help, I'd really appreciate it."
Yeah, Caroline. Oh, wait, sorry. Yeah, Caroline. How about you go fuck yourself?
Yes, sir. Okay, so we didn't make any of that up. That's all actually quotes from what actually happened when they're shutting down the firm. And like the tale of FTX from start to finish, awkward, uncomfortable, and kind of funny, I think, at the end of the day.
That, I think we did a good job. This is like performance art. I think we did a good job of communicating the stunning awkwardness of that situation.
We needed some music. Next time we're going to get some music when we recreate, I don't know, like CZ like firing all the executive staff or whatever.
Yeah.
But yeah, awkward day for FTX. Awkward day and painful for many others. But that's it for we talked about SPF for like 40 minutes, but
yeah, you know, my it is the unfortunately once again the big news. Headline item of the week. Mm-hmm. As our coins crab in a low volume crap fest.
Oh yeah,
the next reenacting will be Fed printing money. Mikey will play the balance sheet.
Oh, Mr. Got Plenty. I'm telling Clay when he comes back about the gerbils, the slaves, the ketones, Mike acting like Caroline, Austin working with BitBoy. I'm telling everything. We got a snitch in the chat, fellas. Take him down.
We're out of pocket. All right. That's okay.
Snitches get bitches, and Mr. Got Plenty has plenty.
Next up, we want to talk about Beavis's little project here. Beavis's little project, the O Foundation. So last week, you know, we talked at length about chapters, and now you got one? You got a chapter launching? Is what
we've
I'm
got
getting
a chapter.
Here?
We've got a chapter. Oh, how time flies. Yeah, we've got a new lending ecosystem coming to Mantle. And if you're not familiar with Mantle, it's an L2 powered by EigenLayer or EigenLayer, whatever it's called, from the BitDAO team, formerly BitDAO, now Mantle. And they're the biggest DAO in the industry, $800 million of ETH, hundreds of millions of dollars of USDC, billions of dollars of tokens on their balance sheet. And yeah, we see a ton of opportunity there to, help build some ecosystem, help build some economy. Mm-hmm. And we got a nice grant from them with the potential for further grants, depending on how good we could do. So yeah, super duper exciting.
Fantastic. So this is a pretty big step for you guys, huh? Pretty big step for the Oath Foundation, Oath governance even. You guys are really going to flex these governance muscles because you guys got to vote on everything, right?
Yeah.
Who's taking it over? You guys have to vote on who's going to be the leader?
Yeah. I mean, right now, like this is something that I kind of – like chapters existed after we started this effort, after we started talking to Mantle and talking to their directors. And it was basically like, you know, what all these people want right now, and this is the depths of the bear market. What everybody wants is they want native projects. They want native tokens. So coming to the table with Oath, it's like, oh, you know, great, but what kind of support do we have for you? So, you know, we sat down and thought, you know, we're an engineering organization. You know, the Oath Foundation in its history has focused on building software and making the best software. And, you know, fleshing out our marketing and our business development, aligning incentives on that front is like something we've started doing recently and we need to start doing more, moving away from going hard on engineering nonstop to, okay, let's market this tech and let's get people used to it and in the mix. And that's kind of how chapters were born, because it was like, we want Oath Foundation to be like the mothership, you know, we want Oath Foundation to be creating the technology, iterating on the technology, perfecting the technology, securing the technology, and then just kind of abiding by a fairly typical license or franchise type model, where it's like, hey, you know, you can use the technology if you, you know, do something that we probably wouldn't have the capacity to do ourselves. And that's what we're doing on Mantle. You know, we'll see that all over the place. And yeah, we're just kind of extending our reach and trying to build really tight, sustainable, user-friendly ecosystems, hopefully all over the place. So as far as leadership goes, Aurelius is like, you know, kind of the child of myself and some of our administrative team, you know, trying to perfect the chapter model. And, you know, going forward, hopefully, you know, as we kind of knight an administrator and an engineer, making kind of house its own little community and ecosystem. So,
So you guys
one
are
step of many.
You guys are going to knight someone from the audience, from the governance?
Yep. Actually, Mr. Got Plenty. Is going to lead the charge here.
I was gonna ask who like what the, is there like an application process? Is there like a vetting process? Like how do you pick and find who's worthy to run the chapter? Because this is essentially ethos on Mantle, right? Is essentially what they're gonna be running.
Yeah. It's basically like people that we know are reputable and that we've been working with a long time. Mm-hmm. This is who we're talking to about chapters. You know, I don't want to name names, but you know, people that probably everyone here is familiar with. And the nice thing is with Ethos Reserve, because it's open-ended, you just pop it on top of any protocol and it instantly makes it way better. So it's like a really kind of easy pitch, to be honest. And I think that's kind of the measure of a good product or product market fit is like, you know, hey, do you want this? And the answer is always yes. It's just, you know, okay, you know, how do we get it? Is where the difficulties lie. And we've just been figuring all of that out. So Aurelius is going to be one of the more innovative protocols in the whole space right now. So Aurelius will be bigger and better than Granary. Honestly,
big words.
Granary is like, I haven't talked about Granary much just because, you know, we're waiting on the audit. We're waiting on, you know, getting everything perfected. But I don't think there will be a single protocol in the whole industry that really holds a candle to Granary, at least in the lending and yield product domain, Granary V2 at least. And yeah, it's kind of our perspective right now is like, you know, anything less than absolutely flawless on the Granary end, anything less than the absolute best, anything less than, you know, oh, lending is solved. You know, we don't need to worry about lending anymore. Granary's got it handled. I think to us isn't good enough. So, Aurelius definitely will not be better than Granary V2 necessarily, but it will be different. It'll provide a different value proposition. And
it's a different tool.
It's a different tool. The risk profile is a little different, and the way we're penetrating the market is a little different.
Fantastic! Oh my god, this cat is screaming at me, dude. Interesting, fantastic. Any hesitation for launching in this market, though? You got any reservations about that?
Yeah, I mean, we're not launching the token for a while. Really, it's just going to be the protocol. We've got that Mantle grant. We've got some partners. We're going to try to get people kind of familiar, fix bugs, get everything working really nice, and then kind of segue into a token launch, et cetera. But yeah, it's this market is crap.
Yeah, it's someone's been watching the macro show with Drake on. I watched an episode last night, quite good, and it's pretty much what he's getting at. It's crap right now, dude.
Yeah, it's volume. The issue is volumes are really low, and on anything that isn't Bitcoin or ETH or like LINK for a few days is just getting lower. And this is like generally the darkness before the dawn. I think that's a really important thing to think about, because generally when volumes are low, you know, tokens are still emitting, you know, they're mostly getting dumped. Coins are in hell. They're burning. Mm-hmm. They're being destroyed. But really, I think this is an opportunity to gain the mind share, gain as much market share as possible before a turnaround point.
I've been thinking that similarly. I think, this is also informed from a lot of the things Dracon was saying in the video I watched yesterday. You guys should definitely check it out. But it seems like things aren't getting better right now, but it seems like we are bottoming out. To Philip's point, the ETH ETF volume was a joke. Yes, it was very small from VanEck. I thought it was kind of sweet of them, though, to be like,
it was sweet. 10, and they're a small firm. Yeah, that was really 10% sweet. 10%
back to the ETH developers. Thanks so much. That's fantastic. But yeah, I mean, if we want to talk a little bit about general market trends right now, I saw a couple things that kind of grossed me out. Long duration treasury bonds have now lost more in percent terms than stocks did during the great financial crisis.
Extended
duration ETF, 58%. So what this means here, let's translate this to English. U.S. treasury bonds are now lower in total return than they've ever been. What does that mean? That means no one's buying them, right? The yield's disgusting.
It means that because they're illiquid and they're yielding 2% or whatever the hell, now you can get short duration bonds, which are way less risky and earn over 5%. So like, who wants an illiquid position that gives them the right to a US dollar forever from now when you can get literally the same thing that yields 2.5 to 3 times? It's like, it's crap. Like, those are junk, crappy bonds. It's really, really kind of, anybody who bought like 30 year bonds at 2%, absolutely psychotic.
Yeah, they're getting completely obliterated. I feel like they would have to be forced to at gunpoint to buy them. No one in their right mind is buying them.
Maybe if you have insanely long time horizons, you know, but even so, like, you think of compounding interest over 20, 30 years.
Yeah, I don't think any manager or central bank has really any use for them in their portfolio, really.
Yeah, it's absolute crap. It's like it sent it to zero, you know. The opportunity cost of having capital tied up in a long duration, you know, U.S. Treasury at 2% is like, it's insane. Like, if you tie $1 million up in there, like, you look at the compounding interest, it's like it's multiple millions of just like absolute crap. Rest in peace. Good thing every crypto guy is a macro expert now, so we will never make these mistakes.
I think this is a great opportunity to be learning about macro, because this is a very
interesting
for our lifetime. I mean, not that it's always interesting if you're a nerd like me, but for most of our lifetime, the trends have generally been the same, except for like 2008. But even then, it kind of rebounded and like, let's just increase liquidity like crazy. We're seeing some interesting things play out geopolitically and economically that work in tandem, right? Like, the so-called de-dollarization that's happening, you're kind of seeing that's not really taking place. I posted it on my Twitter, but there is an excerpt from a Wall Street Journal article. They're talking about de-dollarization. Yeah, China's not buying all these treasuries anymore. Big reason why these treasuries are dropping is because no one's buying them, because international markets don't have the appetite for them anymore. People would claim that this is because of de-dollarization, but apparently what's actually happening, Chinese banks are dumping U.S. treasuries to buy U.S. REITs, REITs, real estate investment trust. So it's not that they don't want American dollars, baby. They just want them in a better way. Dude,
literally China is going to eventually just own like all the land in the US, and then it's just game over. Okay. It's like BlackRock versus China, like 1v1.
We get an economic victory.
Yeah. They're on their like Age of Empires.
Who are you guys rooting for, BlackRock or China?
I gotta say, it's nice. As someone who is not very sociable, it's nice just having all these unoccupied Chinese houses around. It's just so awesome. I'm just kidding. They rent them out. I'm rooting for BlackRock.
Mm-hmm. You're rooting for BlackRock.
Let's go, BlackRock. I need them to flip some of their real estate profits into shit coins.
Yes.
I don't think China's doing that yet. Maybe they're doing it.
So, I mean, we've talked about it plenty of times before, though. So what this means is like liquidity is all dried up for the most part for high risk assets. We're seeing some people in the chat. I think it was Philip saying, and maybe even John Stepp saying, we can maybe see a turnaround here soon. After these bottom out, and I kind of agree.
Little end of the year rally.
Yeah, a little end of the year rally.
Yes, Bember and DGen. Bember.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, Bember and
yeah, DGen. Yeah, that's what you posted in chat. Yes, Bember, DGenber.
Yeah.
It's a stretch, but I like it. I like the effort. Yeah, so we've got some a little bit more room for pain. I don't think overall the trend is going to reverse. I think we're going to bounce essentially, and then it's going to crab for longer. That's what it's looking like to me from this data, but we'll see. Maybe you will get a nice Christmas present. Maybe you'll be able to afford some Christmas presents this year. Some of us might even be able to afford a bed to sleep in this winter.
I can't wait.
Nice little bounce.
Yeah, this is it always seems like things are at their worst, and then they just get a little worse. But I think quarter four in a shitty market like this is going to be all like window dressing. It's going to be all like tax loss harvesting. It's just going to be pure pain and agony.
Oh, it's going to be great when tax season rolls around.
Yeah, I'm literally just like, I don't touch my money. I just like do business and just try to get positioned for 2024. I think that's really all you can do. And, you know, luckily, I mean, this is the time to put in the work and put in the hustle, because I know you guys don't have anything else going on, you know, unless you're an elite trader. And even they are not having fun. Build a business, you know, build on your personal life, you know, you know, try to set yourself up to scale. And I think
once again, calling for you to give up fun, get to work,
get to work.
More fun time, uninstall Steam, uninstall League of Legends, fellas.
If you're gaming right now, you may as well just kill yourself. I'm just kidding. I'm sorry. I'm watching Big Bang Theory. I'm almost done. I'm down to the last handful of episodes, but I'm playing a little bit of Baldur's Gate right now. That's how I'm spending my evenings, forcing my girlfriend to watch me run around and get killed.
An age-old tradition.
Yeah, but
forcing your girlfriend to watch you lose at video games, classic.
I know we're in economic news and that we are in hell right now, but BCA Man has a question real quick, maybe for Bibas. Do we maybe see one day Link on Ethos or in Grand Re lending?
Maybe. I think sourcing demand is the big thing. I think Link is a really great asset. But I think and they have great tech, but there is like a lot of marketing and not a lot of adoption of like the token. I mean, there's adoption of Chainlink price feed oracles, but that I don't think is a moat. I think over time, other solutions are going to get as secure. Mm-hmm. And they're really, really going hard on CCIP right now. But they're also late to market on the cross-chain messaging. So I just wonder, like, can their intense and awesome marketing and business development, which comes at a huge overhead cost, a massive overhead cost, can that translate into the institutional adoption that they're pitching? I think that, to me, is the big question with Chainlink. Otherwise, I think 100%. I mean, really, I want to see CCIP roll out and get a few huge mind-melting headline customers, and then I'll be like, okay, because they have the marketing machine to turn it into a standard institutionally. Mm-hmm. But right now, all of their relationships are just tests. They're just demonstrations. And, you know, I want to see that convert before I'm like, okay, this is it. This is mm-hmm. the real deal. And I think they'll do it. And at that point, I'll be like, okay, I can see Link being relevant in 10, 20, 30 years. And that's the point where it's like, okay, you know, let's throw it on Ethos. And I mean, you know, we have OP on there, so maybe I'm just hand-wringing. I think the difference is, like, you know, Link doesn't have governance. They don't have any way for the token to maintain value, and they dump a lot of it.
Yeah.
Which is to say, I think, like, that dumping converts down the line. I think the funding of the marketing machine is really handy, but we just need to transition, and, you know, it needs to get that Lindy effect going. And otherwise, yeah, I mean, Link is awesome.
I think Link is swag. I think Link Marines are going to seize victory. I think they're going to, you know, deploy everywhere, and they're going to hunt down all the yield and
crude oil. Yeah.
Excuse me. Wow. DCA man says, thank you for the response, Beavis.
Yes, of course. Yeah, I think Link is going to be a winner. It's just like they have, like, one last step, which is conversion. Mm-hmm. You know, right now, and they're like mid step, so it's like half a step. Yeah. And I think they're going to be able to pull it off. They're, I mean, killer operators.
I think they've got a nice diversification of value, I think, is kind of what they're kind of going for, because, yeah, like you said, there are other price oracles. There are other oracles out there that are coming up. We're going to be talking to Redstone here. And if you remember, we did talk to Dia Data, and they're doing big things too. Yep. So the good thing about Chainlink, though, is I guess they're not asleep behind the wheel.
Yeah. They want to be AWS, and there are a bunch of providers that are cheaper than AWS. There are providers that do specific things better than AWS. Mm-hmm. But being the old reliable, who's designing the interfaces, setting the standards, and that everybody kind of falls in line behind, Chainlink is, like, killing that game. And that, I think, 100% will transition to, okay, now we are, you know, at the head of a growing industry. Mm-hmm. But really, like, ETH and Bitcoin, I think, can be successful without mass adoption of Web3 and DeFi. But Link, it requires mass adoption of Web3 and DeFi to actually become what it's poised to become. And I think that's, like, a big, important thing for them.
John Stepp said staked Link will earn protocol fees in the future.
Yeah, I mean, like, the thing is, you know, Chainlink has been working on, like, turning their open source, you know, subsidized services into a revenue generating machine for a while. I think probably their biggest source of revenue is service agreements with foundations for actually deploying Chainlink and setting up nodes and all that. You know, they, like, tens of millions of dollars every time Chainlink gets deployed somewhere is what you can expect, which is awesome. If that is what's going to Link stakers, then boy, oh boy, you better believe we're listing Link. But I'm not sure if they're kind of back I mean, I don't want to say backroom deal. I mean, it's literally their back office, their administrative staff, you know, closing deals.
I mean, that gets me kind of hot under the collar thinking about that, dude.
That would be crazy. I mean, Link is
that makes you like a Visa shareholder almost. Like, that's crazy. Liquid.
Yeah, and it's swaggy, and Sergey is awesome. Like, it checks all the boxes. Sergey, I don't know. It checks all the boxes, but give it a year or two, I think.
Hello, I am really... Sergey.
Yeah.
What do you mean by that?
What do you mean by that?
What do you mean?
Carolina all voice right. guy.
Very funny.
I had sweater.
I had one more little section. I had actually two little points, but you know, if you got time, I do think it's kind of funny to kind of end on something a little goofy. This is not really crypto related. It's tangentially crypto. A lot of crypto business happens through here, a lot of crypto marketing. But Elon Musk and his black hole purchase, according to this Reuters article, I call them Reuters, I call them routers because they're routing you the information because I'm a little freak like that. Elon Musk acts as a black hole of value. So, you know, $13 billion of debt these bankers are holding for Twitter. And they're not happy with the returns they're getting. They're not happy with the direction the site's going. They're not happy about the use statistics. There's a risk that, you know, they back out of the deal. I don't really know what that means, Mikey. Does that mean that they're just going to shut down X and liquidate it, baby? What would we do then? What do we do then, Bebis? Do we go to Frentech?
I don't know if they'd shut it down. They would take the keys back, basically from Musk, you know. And I think I saw a tweet. Maybe I still have it up. You know, repossess it, rebrand it back to Twitter, boot off the toxic accounts, rework the moderation system, invite advertisers back, which was like 90% of Twitter's revenue back in the day. Do a big PR campaign saying the bird is back, build new features and policies to move the product forward and build trust with end users and advertisers.
Wow.
That's the way that I can see it going.
I mean, this is from Twitter.
Tech Witch is the one that wrote that. If it was repossessed.
Not to be a devil's advocate.
Be it.
But as someone who runs a business... Mm-hmm. As someone who has multiple brands, as someone who spends a lot of time creating content for Twitter or X, whatever it's called now, I think Elon's changes are positive, and I can see him taking over, like getting huge, high revenue market share in so many different domains. Like Medium right now is going to get its lunch eaten by Twitter, I think. Same with Substack.
With long form posts.
Mm-hmm. I see, you know, YouTube, LinkedIn, I see all this stuff just getting snapped up by Twitter. And to be honest, like Twitter was hemorrhaging money beforehand. And, you know, Elon made it private, and his goal seems to me is to turn it into a revenue generating machine. So right now we're in a transitionary period where they're shaking out a lot of lower value customers, which sucks. I love low value customers, but at the end of the day, you know, people who find value from the economy of Twitter, people who can derive value from it and deliver value to it, are going to stay. And those are the people who are also willing to pay. And those are the people who are going to use all these different elements. And like right now, like it adds long form posts. Okay, now it's the biggest you know, blogging website in the world. Great. It adds, you know, business features. Okay, now it's bigger than LinkedIn and it does the same thing. It's just...
Live streaming's coming back too.
It's just, it's becoming different. And I know this at a much smaller scale through our kind of businesses and foundations. During that transitionary period, you're going to get churn, you're going to get loss, you're going to lose customers, but what you end up with after the fact is a much higher value product. And like scaling anything in this market is a crapshoot. You know, nobody wants to invest in new stuff. Nobody wants to grow. Nobody wants to hire. Like looking at Twitter now, as if it's not like a result of greater environmental changes. Like I just think this is a really short-term view. And as someone who's been using Twitter for something like 10 years now, I kind of like where things are headed.
Interesting.
In terms of like a business perspective.
I don't think X is any better than it was when it was Twitter. Elon came in and said that the bots would be gone. The bots are still here and worse than ever, in my opinion, because now they can get little checks beside their name. Scammers and bots are getting even the gold checks by their name.
Yeah. I don't think it's better.
The verification system is like just
I feel like Beavis is saying that it's like in a growing pain situation. Like it's worse, but it's on
it can make more money.
It's transforming. I kind of
it can though. It can. It's setting up the avenues for making more money, which didn't exist in Twitter before. Jack could not figure out how to make money with Twitter. And Elon is just kind of, and I'm not an Elon Musk fan. I think, you know, his approach to business is interesting. Yeah. It's not one I necessarily think is that awesome. But Twitter, it was a ticking time bomb. You know, like how long would investors be willing to prop it up? Hemorrhaging money with zero chance.
Like Uber and Grubhub, WeWork.
Yeah, but they actually have like a ton of revenue, you know?
And that's where, and I think that's where it is right now, Beavis, is like, yeah, like there are routes, there are avenues that the X app can certainly start to, you know, create more revenue and get out of this debt that they're in and this sort of like solvency crisis that might be coming. The investors are ready to take.
I don't think they are. I think that is
according to the Reuters article, right? So maybe they're not. I'm getting this information from the Reuters article. But to your point, like
they're probably pissed off. I'm sure they're pissed. Everybody who holds risk assets right now is pissed off about everything.
So how long do they wait? You know, like what is?
I mean, it was a massive multi-billion dollar acquisition. $44 billion
that is now down to, according to the Reuters article, down to $8 billion.
It doesn't matter. They wait a decade.
Like $3 billion in debt.
They wait a decade. It's like if you are doing massive, you know, venture style acquisitions like that. And maybe that's not what this is. Maybe, you know, it was framed to them as, hey, we're just going to take Twitter and we're going to make it a little better and we're going to make more money. So, you know, maybe there was a little bit of a bait and switch with all of the hard pivots. But at the end of the day, if you're operating at that scale, you can't get fucking weak hands after a year. Like, that's ridiculous. You can get pissed off. And demand, get mad, put the pressure on, put the heat on, which is what they're doing. Mm-hmm. But it's like if you're operating at that scale and you don't have at least a 10-year time horizon, mm-hmm. then you're a fool. And I guess these people were just financing loans and the loans are underwater. Okay. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I don't think Twitter turns it around. I think Twitter was already mired in all sorts of problems.
Oh.
And I mean, Twitter, I don't think if they change it from X to Twitter, that's like the solution.
Oh, I think they might be kind of in a, like you're saying, Beavis, they're kind of like pivoting, right? But if they were to pivot back, I don't think that would fix any of their problems.
It would just make everything worse. You just got to go for
it. I think it might just be dead already because, you know, I see what you're saying. He's turning Twitter into a revenue generating machine, which is great. But I think a lot of the value proposition that existed for Twitter originally was the open access. That's what people got. What people like to use Twitter for originally, what the big appeal was, is you could get in there. This is just like a forum, right? Like in the old days, you can go in there and you could socialize, but you could brush shoulders digitally with very famous, very powerful people.
And that remains.
That remains to some extent, but you can kind of see them closing the gap, and it's kind of getting more.
I don't think they're closing the gap.
You don't
think
so? Think
of like a free to play
charging
game.
A monthly fee for everybody. That's like
no, that was
we
like
can get rid of the bots.
That had to have been a troll. If he does that, he's an absolute fool. He's like, you know, a straight up idiot, because the bots are already paying thousands of dollars to get the verifications. I think like you know what we see is I lost my train of thought, but
I just don't know also what competitive edge it necessarily brings to like against like YouTube. Like if I want to watch a video, I'm not going to X and looking for a video. I'm not going, like, I'll go to YouTube because that's where I know that video creators are. You'd need to foster like a whole new culture of video content generation. The same with like LinkedIn. Like I use Twitter for professional like connections because I work in a digital space. But yeah, you know, a guy who works at like acquisitions for fucking Chase Bank or whatever, he's not gonna go on Twitter and like right next to the femboy cat girl poster be looking for, you know, like a professional bankers to network with.
Maybe it just is too much, you know, and I think that's like where the transitional pains come in. It's
I
like
think what you should do if
overkill.
You wanted to make money, you should have made it so you could pay money to ban people and you had to pay money to unban people, and you could pay money to change people's profile pictures.
Infinite money in 1 second. Yeah. I mean, I think he's just Leading I mean maybe harassment. This is just because he's like somehow he's like performed surgery on himself to become a Zoomer despite being like 50 years old.
He's performed surgery on himself.
I think he's like he's kind of trying to go the free to play game approach, where it's like you hop in, you're introduced to this world where it's a little bit divorced from reality, to be honest. You know, in some, you know, depending on where the algorithm sends you, you know, you're either in a hyper capitalist, like, you know, business world, or you're in like a, you know, weird communist think tank, or you're in like, you know, a funny joke sort of realm. And I think someone did the data, like people literally end up in totally insulated spheres. Thanks to how these algorithms disperse content. And, you know, over time, as you become more committed, you're likelier to spend that $8 a month. You're likelier to buy extra stuff. And, you know, sure, I don't think Twitter ever gets the content creator community that YouTube does. Like, I don't think Twitter is going to give birth to stars. But what I do think is Twitter is going to kind of be like TikTok, where, you know, no matter what domain you're in, when it's time to plug in, it will like trap you. And I think it does that for a lot of people right now. And I think it's just going to get worse because, you know, it's a game, and YouTube isn't like gamified like that. YouTube is an actual serious video platform that has like, you know, good content.
I don't know. I think there is some of that, Mikey. I'm not Richard Hart, dude. Come on now. I think YouTube also has a bit of the gamification, but, you know, I feel like we might be kind of getting a little out there. You know, we could do a whole show on Twitter and X and how I feel about it and the silification and kind of what Elon's doing to break out of that, because I do think he's kind of getting out of that. But I want to give you back the rest of your afternoon, Beavis, because we're over. We're about 20 minutes over. So I want to thank everybody for tuning in and watching. I hope you enjoyed our presentation on Super Bankman-Fried and the new Oath chapter and kind of the misery of the economy at the moment. We'll see you guys next week, next Tuesday, DeFi Tuesday. We have a special show for you guys. You got to be there. You don't want to miss that one.
And of course, the Shimmer community X space on Monday as well, 12 p.m. Eastern Standard Time.
6 p.m. CET.
Like, comment, and subscribe, or yeah, become destroyed.
Please, please. Well, guys, anything else we want to plug? I think that's it, though, right? Monday, Shimmer Space, Mantle. I don't know anything about it. I should check it out. Check it out with me. And Quiz Show 3, Wally, come on. Quiz, you already spent your money. You already spent your winnings.
Jeez. Quiz Show 3. Wally's won in both quizzes so far that we've done. But yeah, I'm sure there'll be a 3-1 eventually.
Someone
maybe the third quiz is sponsored by Oath. Who knows?
Wow, big eyes. All right, folks. We'll see you next Monday.
Bye, guys.
Bye, guys. Thank you.
Stay broke.